Good morning.
And I would second that. Good morning.
It is a good morning. We had a great summer, Doctor. We had a great summer here in New York.
Were you out over to the State Fair, were you?
State Fair, which broke the attendance record at 1.3 million for the fourth year in a row. Saratoga Racetrack had a great, great banner year. Tourism in upstate New York at an all-time high, Doctor. Lake Ontario, which is suffering from the flooding, as you know, we did a tourism boost, and Lake Ontario had a good summer, all in all, considering. So it was a banner year. Banner summer for New York.
Well, I'm so sorry I couldn't join you. I was indisposed out to the State Fair. You were very nice to invite me. But I didn't want to go. So that was it. Yes, that's true.
That was a little personally offensive, by the way, when the governor of the state invites you to come to the state fair and you on air declined. I mean, your candor was really extraordinary.
And I would have been sitting right next to you on the train, right? We would have been.
Yes.
It was a nice train ride.
It was a nice train ride. Taste of New York, Amtrak train. Sample New York cuisine.
Yeah.
It was very nice. And the fair is a totally different fair than you've ever seen before.
Well, you make it sound, I don't feel a bit sorry that I didn't go, by the way. I just want you to know that, it's part of who I am. I'm obstreperous.
That's even more insulting, frankly.
I got it. Yeah. Which was, of course, my intention. So
you accomplished your intention. I respect that.
So, Governor, let's talk a little bit about big news you've made that, as a political scientist, I'm very interested in, and that is the idea that maybe we should move our presidential primary earlier so that we count as opposed to bringing up the rear. Maybe you could speak to that for a minute.
Yes, this is a very important issue. And people have to understand it because it has profound consequences. What has happened electorally is we had originally the primaries were in September in the state. The statewide primaries were September. The federal government passed a law a couple of years ago that said the congressional primaries had to be in June for some voting access reason and ballot access. We then moved the state primaries to be consistent with the congressional primaries to June 23rd, on the theory that we're all about democracy and easy voting and automatic voter registration, early voting, et cetera. Make it easy for people to vote. So why would you ever have different election days? So we moved the state primaries to coordinate with the congressional primaries the end of June. Now comes along this year the presidential primary. We set the presidential primary right now for April. So we have an April 28th presidential primary right now, a June 23rd congressional and state primary, which obviously makes no sense, Alan. Why would you tell everybody come out and vote in April, and then, by the way, 2 months later, you have to come out to vote for the congressional and the state races? It costs you about an additional $20 million, and it's totally opposite everything we've been trying to do with easy voting, at least coordinate election days. You then move into the question of, if you have to align these dates, what do you do? Do you move the presidential primary back? Do you leave the presidential primary where it is and move the congressional and state elections up to the presidential primary? And as long as you're thinking about it, when you are at April 28th on the presidential primary, you're sort of in no man's land, no person's land, because you're after Super Tuesday, so are you really impactful as a state?
Right.
That's the question. And could you have a primary, presidential primary date, which makes you more impactful as a state?
Okay, so in terms of the early primary states, the New Hampshire, which has made an industry out of the whole thing, can you get ahead of them without them putting their primary the day after the last election, to be somewhat cynical?
It's a good question. What the DNC, Democratic National Committee, has done is they've set up a set of rules where they penalize a state that goes early by reducing the number of delegates it gets. And you want to have a large delegate population because you could be instrumental at the convention. Any vote that comes up at the convention, you vote your delegation. And the DNC has set it up that if you go earlier, you lose delegates. And politically, a lot of people want to be delegates. And if you lose delegates, then you have a micro political problem of people who want to go to the convention and be delegates get upset because you have fewer delegate slots. On the flip side, your point as a political scientist, you would have more impact in the dialogue, right?
Of course. Well, that's what you want, right? Let's face facts. That's what you, Andrew Cuomo, want to have happen. You want to count for more.
Well, I want a robust debate and dialogue among Democratic candidates that takes into consideration New York's issues.
Exactly.
I haven't heard them say boo about SALT, the state and local taxes, which decimated this state. None of them have mentioned it. We have the best gun control law in the United States of America. I still can't tell you what their position is on guns and private sales, et cetera. We have the most aggressive climate change policy. I would like to say to them, will you adopt our climate change policy? Will you adopt our college tuition program where you go to a public school for free? Where are you on infrastructure, really? And don't give me pablum. We're doing more infrastructure than any state in the United States of America. We can show you how to do it. Will you support our efforts? So it's our agenda, really, Alan, that I don't think is getting the attention it should. And if they had to come into this state and actually perform in this state and answer the questions in this state, which I think would make the entire process better, because, you know, New York's issues are California's issues. They are major states that have both rural and urban populations. So being irrelevant as a matter of timing is not just make the dialogue in the state reduced. I don't think it serves the Democratic candidates as well.
Okay. So as for a matter of clarification, for those of us who are a little bit insecure about following this, will this happen now? Will this happen in 2024? When are we gonna see this happen? Assuming the legislature goes along with you, and that they pass this reformation of the law, when will it happen?
Well, I think you have there's two tranches of decisions. First, I think we have to at least coordinate the presidential primary and the congressional and the state races.
Okay,
I don't see how you say, as a matter of good government, how you defend to the taxpayers, we're going to have two separate elections. I know we passed automatic voting registration and all these good government pro-democracy measures, and everybody says we have to make it easier to vote, but we're going to have two separate elections 2 months apart, and the state races are going to be and congressional after the presidential. I mean, who votes in that second election, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You just go through a presidential primary, and now I'm supposed to come out and vote 2 months later for my congresspeople and my assembly and senate?
Now, I take it you've talked to Speaker Hastie and Senate folks, and you know whether or not they're willing to make a February primary. Are they?
Well, the first tranche is, shouldn't we coordinate the elections? And I think everyone has to say yes as a matter of good government. And again, who's going to go to the taxpayers and say, I'm going to spend another $20 million for another election? Second, when is that election? And that then gets into the timing of the presidential. Politically, there will be great opposition to reducing the number of delegates of the state. Again, for a micro reason, they don't want to have fewer slots for delegates. And the other states won't be happy if you go earlier. So February, I think, is really not a viable date politically. You could, as a political scientist, say, you know, that would be great to actually kick off the dialogue and change the dialogue from just caucus states, smaller states, more rural states, to have a more diverse dialogue. And if I were a political scientist teaching the course, I would say yes. But politically, I don't think it's viable.
Okay.
But you have to at least coordinate the schedules, in my opinion. Otherwise, it's all a mockery.
Okay. Now, I'm getting a lot of mail from people like Frank, who wants to know about the license plate issue. Now, you did cover that in great depth the last time we spoke, as to the legislature was responsible for the license plate law and the $25 and all the rest of it. But people really want to know, whether or not you're responsible for their having to fork over that $25.
Yeah, this is, since we're in the spirit of candor and you told me you didn't want to come to the state fair.
Yeah, I didn't.
Let's be candid. This is cheap politics meets cheap journalism. That's why people are confused.
Okay. And
I've seen the news stories, and I understand why people are confused and why people sort of have given up on the whole process. Politicians do cheap press releases to score cheap political points. No kidding. It's been the way of the world. It's compounded by cheap journalism. $25 fee has been in effect for 10 years since Governor David Patterson. The legislators who now say, oh, it shouldn't be $25, the governor, you hypocrite, you voted for the budget. You were in the majority.
You're talking about the Republican like James Tedesco, for example, who gives you a hard time on this. Is that what you're saying?
I'm calling
him a hypocrite?
Any legislator who criticizes it, because it's been in place for 10 years. If you were an assembly person, you could have changed it any year for the past 10 years. You've been in the majority. If you're a Republican senator, you could have changed it any year. You were in the majority. It's been $25 for 10 years. Hasn't gone up with the cost of inflation, etc. So you're phony and you're a hypocrite. And the discussion would be, since money is fungible, you want to make it reduce to 25? You want to reduce it to zero? Fine. Find the money. And that's the budget discussion every year. None of these fees have to be what they are. No tax rate has to be what it is. You could make the license plate fee zero. You could make the fishing license fee zero. The hunting license fee zero. Just find the money. And that's what the budget does every year. We balance the funds in and the funds out. So that's the hypocrisy. And that's what a reporter would have said. Should have said, Senator, why didn't you change it when you were in the majority? And what do you want to reduce it to, and where do you find the money?
Are you thinking of any specific reporters?
No. Generic reporters.
Because, all reporters aren't.
I have family members in journalism. So this conversation of when you don't ask the obvious follow-up question to expose the hypocrisy, are you not part of the charade that turns the American electorate off and says, I don't believe anyone. None of it makes sense.
I'm moving
anyway,
on.
Hold it. Let me just finish because there's two parts to it.
All right.
The second issue is we now have this electronic tolling. The electronic tolling requires a camera to take a picture of the license plate. If your license plate is damaged and it's peeling or it's bent or it's old and the reflective coating is gone, the camera won't work. If the camera doesn't work taking a picture of your license plate, that means everybody else has to pay the toll because it doesn't send the toll to your house, the bill to your house. So you have to now inspect a license plate because it's not just a matter of a police officer being able to read the plate. It's these cameras being able to take a picture. We don't want anyone to have to replace a plate if the plate is in fine condition. And I said we have to find a way to inspect a license plate to determine whether or not it has to be replaced. I don't know if that's, and they're working on that now, but I'm open to anything to do that. I don't know if we make it part of the annual inspection. I don't know if you bring your license plate into the DMV and you show it to the person at the counter. I don't know. Whatever is practical, we will do. Because if you don't have to replace the plate, if the plate is fine, fine. But if the plate is not fine and you're charging other drivers because we can't bill you, that's not fair.
Now, I got to go to presidential politics for a minute or two. First of all, Mayor de Blasio says that he could drop out of the presidential race in October. Should he be as candid as you can? Should he drop out sooner than that?
Hello?
Hello.
I lost you. I'm sorry.
Hello.
That was the next question?
Oh, I see. That was the next question. I'm going to take that as a yes. I'm going to take that as a yes. Okay.
I threw you for a second. I'll tell
the
truth.
Yes, you did, of course. Well, you're much smarter than I am. I mean, what am I? An old guy who asks questions. Okay. You've been backing.
Everybody makes their own political decisions.
You've been backing the vice president, former Vice President Biden, in his bid for the presidency. But many Democrats think he's been so shaky so far, and he misrepresented his history with the Iraq war vote this week on NPR. Are you still confident in his campaign?
I have not endorsed anyone for president.
Well, you sort of did. You talked in the beginning about how great he was and all the rest.
There is no sort of endorsement. There is no sort of. It's one of those binary things. I haven't endorsed anyone. I have said I'm
what
very
does that
fond
mean,
of
binary? I'm sorry. I'm stupid. What does binary mean in this case?
You endorse or you don't
okay.
endorse. You are in the race or you dropped out of the race. You know, it's one of those. It's black or white. I have not endorsed anyone.
It sounded to me like you were endorsing him. I don't want to give you a hard time here, Governor.
No, you do want to give me a hard time.
Okay. I want to give you a hard time. That's true. So,
yes.
So it sounded like you were very favorable towards Biden. And this sounds like big news that you're sort of backing away from Biden.
No, I'm not backing away from him. I am very favorable towards him. I'm fond of him. I know him personally. I've worked well with him. He has been phenomenal for the state of New York. Phenomenal. As vice president, whatever we needed, frankly, he was the liaison and he was the federal official who actually made sure things happened for New York. And I think he's an extraordinary man. But I've not officially endorsed anyone.
Is anybody looking better to you? I mean, as we go along these sweepstakes, is there anybody who you think is, you know, coming along in a surprising way or a different way?
You know, I view it from the lens of New York.
Yeah, sure. That's fair.
And I want to know, I want you to speak to New York's issues. And that's when we were talking about the primary date for New York. Alan, I can't tell you what their positions are on guns. They're really thorough position. Yeah. I can't tell you what Sanders really believes. So he's against assault weapons. Where are you on private sales? We just went through Odessa, Texas. We want to close loopholes, background checks. Yeah, you have no background check system unless you're willing to have a background check on private sales. You have 400 million guns in the United States right now. If you don't close the private sale loophole, then the exception swallows the rule. I can't tell you what their position is. I haven't heard it, and I've listened to all of this stuff and all the debates. I don't know where they are really on a climate change program. I get the goal and the aspiration, but dreams are nice. I want to know how you accomplish that. So I just think the whole dialogue still, even with all these forums and all these interviews, I don't think it's really been demonstrative of what they believe they can do and how they can do it. You know, I can sit here all day long and say, you know, I want to solve cancer. Elect me and I will solve and cure cancer. Oh, that's great. By the way, the how is what is relevant, you know? And what experience do you have that suggests you could do it? And have you ever done anything like it before? Do you have any accomplishment that would suggest maybe you have the skill to do this? So I think the whole dialogue, frankly, has not been illuminating enough and to a depth that can really allow people to make an informed judgment. And that's why New York, you know, you come into New York, you can't tap dance. We won't let you tap dance. And we have done these things. I'll tell you what's amazing. Everything they're talking about doing, we have done in New York. And we did it first. We did the $15 minimum wage. It's not an academic issue to us. We have the most aggressive climate change policy. We have the best gun control law. We've done free college tuition. So you come here. It's not aspirational. It's practical. We've done it. We know how to do it.
Speaking of hiring, you hired Kumiki Gibson, who was fired as commissioner of the State Division of Human Rights in 2008 by Governor David Patterson over a treatment of staff, allegedly. Why do you want to bring her back?
Oh, Kumiki Gibson is a superstar. I worked with her in the White House. She was counsel to Vice President Al Gore. And I worked with her when I was HUD secretary and she was vice president. She was counsel to the Vice President of the United States. I mean, just think about that. Originally from Buffalo, Harvard grad. She is a superstar. And she is a real, real coup for us. I think when you look at the talent that we have hired this year, I think, Alan, we have the strongest team that I've had since being governor. The depth of the talent, the breadth of the talent is the best team I've had since I took office.
And have you learned anything? Have you learned anything since you took office? As long as you raise that, you know, a couple of your guys are on the way to jail or are in jail. Was that a wake up call for you about how to hire? Is that an impertinent question?
Well, a couple of guys is not impertinent. It's not factual.
Well, but
I had a person who worked for me who has gone to jail. That is a true statement. And that was personally a very difficult situation. Look, I have hundreds of people who have worked for me. And obviously we have people who have made mistakes. And do you try to learn? Yes. Can I say that there will never be there'll never be another mistake made by anyone who works for me? No.
Yeah, but that isn't what I was asking you. You raised it. It's your fault because you said this is the strongest group we've ever had. I'm willing to go along with that. I want to know whether this is a result of earlier problems.
No, no. If anything, it's a result of when you get to the third term, you want to make sure that you have new ideas and new energy and new talent, and you are refreshing the talent pool and the pool of ideas. You know, at one point, people work for you, all their good ideas they've given you. So I like the key is, to me, more talent, more ideas, newer perspectives. And that's what we have here, all across the board.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair, but I want to know whether when you came in, it was, you know, you had some of the good old boys, some of the people that you had been around you for a long time, and now you realize that that's not a good way to go. You got to get these pros that you're talking about now.
Look, I had people who worked for me, who worked for my father, who were dedicated to public service, and I'm proud of the people who worked for my father. You know, my father, as you know, had very, very high standards and total integrity. And yes, I had people who worked for my father who I knew, and there's something to having relationships with people who you trust and who have the experience and who've been through the game. And there's also something to new people who don't really know state government, but they have different experiences, private sector experiences, different governmental experiences, federal experience, who come in with new ideas and new energy. And I think we have the best mix of both on this team.
Okay, I look, I'm so sorry. I know you consider me to be somewhat fresh by pushing this, but I want to ask you this question. The federal government is allowing the Constitution pipeline to move forward after your DEC rejected the project's permit 3 years ago. What do you do now?
We contest it any way we can. It's the federal government. It's the Trump administration doing what the Trump administration does. They bully. They override. They're disrespectful of states' rights. And his federal government is saying that they should trump state decision-making, which, by the way, is oxymoronic for a Republican conservative administration that normally was believed in deferring to state and local and was opposed to a bullying federal. But this is the Trump administration, which is arrogant and in many ways defies, when convenient, the conservative orthodoxy. And that's
so
what
can you
doing here.
So can you win on this?
We're looking at our legal rights now, but any way we can challenge it, we will.
Okay, a horse died at the Saratoga racetrack on opening day back in July, and the last race of the meet on Monday. You visited the track. You, in fact, you know, sort of, I don't want to use this word because it's a bad word, but bragged about how many people are going to the racetrack. So is it time to end racing and protect those horses?
No, I think you can protect horses, and I think you can continue horse racing. You know, Saratoga is a beautiful part of the state's history and legacy. I think you can do both. I mean, we have racing for horses. You have racing for other animals. You have human beings race, right? So you can race, and you can still protect, do it in a way that protects the animals. And I think we've struck a very good balance in New York. You'll always have situations and injuries. That's true. But I think there's no doubt that we're doing everything we can in this state to keep it a safe sport.
I have a minute. Is there anything you'd like to say in a minute?
I want to go back to you not coming to the state fair, which I just found. Let me give you a piece of advice if I can.
Sure.
You are a Massachusetts resident.
I am
who
proud of
broadcasts
it.
In the state of New York.
Yes.
I think you owe it to your listeners in New York to be fully familiar with the New York situation and circumstance. And maybe you want to make a special effort, since you are a Massachusetts resident and you proudly boast that repeatedly,
true.
Connect with the state and your listeners.
Yeah. Your father once said that I snuck across, I put a black outfit on and snuck across the state line and collected my paycheck and came running back to Massachusetts. That's what he said.
Only he could say that and get away with it.
And I'm proud of it. Hey, Governor, we thank you so much for being with us. It's always fun, and I always learn something, and we appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Doctor. Thanks for having me.